Amy Beanstall will come and share our morning scripture reading.
It's Mark 13, 1 through 8. As he came out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings." Then Jesus asked him, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." When he was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will this be? And what will be the sign that all these things are about to be accomplished?" Then Jesus began to say to them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am he,' and they will lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For a nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. This is but the beginning of the birth pangs."
This reading from Mark may seem a strange text for a stewardship emphasis and our continuing celebration of our 200 years of history as a church. In this passage, the disciples are admiring the architectural grandeur of the temple, the second temple, the one that was built after the people returned from the Babylonian exile. By all accounts, it was massive, an amazing structure of buildings that dominated the city of Jerusalem, visible to people as they made their way up to Jerusalem. But Jesus warned them that its destruction was coming. The tensions, the conflicts between the Jewish people and the occupying Roman army were building, and in less than 40 years from that time, the temple and the whole priestly heritage of leadership would be destroyed, along with much of Jerusalem. Jews and Christians alike would be driven out of Jerusalem and the land of Israel. And nothing was left of the temple except for that bit of wall that's known today as the Wailing Wall. According to the gospel writers, Jesus saw that these terrible troubles were coming, and he tried to prepare his disciples to help them know that as awful as these times would be, they would not be the end of the world. Mark and the other gospel writers, writing later after these events happened, remembered these warnings of Jesus and wrote these passages. Passages we often find difficult to read and know what to do with. All these words about desolation and end times, I found you're like me, I tend to just avoid them. But I think those early believers may have been greatly comforted by these passages, to know that Jesus had predicted that these events were coming, and to remember what Jesus taught them, that their faith was not based in the temple and in its great walls, that their relationship with God was not dependent on that place or on the priest or on their traditions and rituals, and that their hope for the future did not rest in the permanence and the security of their nation. God was still God. God would still be God no matter what came. And God would still be at work no matter where they were in the future. So I think this year, as we celebrate 200 years as a church and look forward to the unknown that lies ahead, there is a word of hope and a challenge here for us. The future is always unknown. What is coming next is always uncertain, and we certainly live in troubled times with great uncertainty about what's coming next. So as we look back to our beginnings, I think it's useful to remember that our first folks 200 years ago had no building, no pastor, no bank account. All they had was their faith in God and their desire to join together and worship and work together as a Baptist church, and the support of some sister Baptist churches in the area. In September, we celebrated our founding on September 25th when that group of 23 or so folks formed a Baptist worshiping community in Danby that they called initially the Danby Baptist Conference. Why conference? I don't know. But the early history of our church of the first 50 years, written by Reverend Titus in 1871, also says that on November 13th, 1821, that same group met with a council of the four other already established Baptist churches in the area. Second Ulysses Baptist, which I think later became First Baptist Trumansburg, Dryden Baptist, Spencer Baptist, and Third Ulysses Baptist. I don't know where First Ulysses was, but these four churches formally recognized that Danby Baptist group as an independent church. It's a great reminder of our Baptist associational connections and our freedoms in practice. They were free to form a Baptist church, but they also sought the recognition, support, and advice of other Baptist churches. Reverend Comstock of Second Ulysses was one of those other Baptists who advised them by 1826 that a move to Ithaca might be the thing to do, because Ithaca was growing much faster than Danby, and many of their members were already living closer to Ithaca than Danby. So on October 18th, 1826, they held their first worship here. Well, not here, in the courthouse, just there, which was new at the time. The old courthouse, as we call it, was the very, very new courthouse in October of 1826. And fairly quickly, they worked out an arrangement where Reverend Comstock was their first pastor, alternating between here and Trumansburg for a period of time. If you read through the description of those early years, pastors are coming and going pretty frequently. They were on one-year contracts and often had differences of opinion about things that led to very short pastorates. But by 1831, they had managed to raise the money to buy this land and build their first church right here on this spot. But that church building burned in 1854. Not long. Can you imagine their distress? And they had to build a whole new building, which they outgrew and built this one in 1890. And there have been, as you read the history, multiple changes and renovations and shifting around, including the one Bill Fry referred to last Sunday, that challenging decision in the late 70s to stay here downtown in this old building and to make significant changes to this space. I still can't quite picture, I've seen the pictures, but I can't quite picture how this sanctuary used to be, but I know some of you can because you were here. But I love the fact that it's now all on one level and that it has the flexibility that we have to move things around. So anyway, if we think about all this about this church building, this is where our written church history, like so many church histories, can easily get very focused on the building and on the comings and goings of pastors. That's not all that's there, but there is a lot of that. If you do a survey, which I've done a few times, if you go on other churches' websites and look for their history, there's an awful lot about buildings. We humans like and need our homes, our dwelling places. And when we think about history, we often get focused on what's tangible, what we can see and touch, what we can document with capital campaigns and architectural plans, and contracts with pastors coming and going. But I think in doing that, we may easily miss what matters so much more in our history, the stories within the story. This space is sacred. It is a sanctuary, not because of its stained glass windows or its organ or its memorial plaques for donors. This place is sacred because of the people who have gathered and worshiped and held congregational meetings in this place. From the time I first walked into this space in July of 2017, I have loved it. I have felt that this space is holy, a thin place where the unseen realm of the Spirit is very, very close to us. I love how light it is, how much natural light there is. I love Rome 1 level, as I said, no one higher than anyone else. And I love that everything is movable, allowing for change and flexibility. But this space is not a sanctuary, a holy place, because it's a church building. It's been made holy by all the people whose love and spirit have blessed this place week after week and year after year. And yes, good pastors and other good staff are important and matter, but we come and go. The true strength of a congregation rests in its faithful, loving members, those of you who give your lives to make this church what it is. You are the church. We, as human beings, we are the church. We are the living sanctuary that is First Baptist Church. This past year and a half, during this pandemic, we've learned the meaning of sacred space in a whole new way. We now know that we can be together, gathered as one church family, virtually. We can be here and there. Some in this room and others in different cities and states and even countries. But when we gather together, we are creating holy space where Jesus is in the midst of us. And so we care for this building. We spend money on it, not for the sake of the building, but for the sake of what this building allows us to do and to be together. And for the ways that we can also share it with our larger community. Thankfully, we are finding ways to reopen this space and share it after the shutdowns of COVID last year. Groups like the Jubilee Singers, a homeschoolers tween group, peer mentors for the family treatment court using some office space upstairs. As Josie mentioned, this Thursday evening in our community room is going to be a transgender day of remembrance ceremony hosted by Ithaca College and Cornell College, who wanted a space that wasn't on campus, that was in the heart of the city, the town. And downstairs, Bill Abels has been organizing shelves and boxes for us to store clothing for the Cornell Farm Workers Program for migrants. So this building continues to be a place that enhances and allows us to be in ministry with our larger community. But our own history and these words from Jesus and Mark remind us that First Baptist Church is never the building. You are the church. We are the church. We are the living sanctuary. Our lives are the living temples where the Spirit of God dwells. Our faith, our love, our hope makes this congregation the great church that it is. Great buildings, beautiful houses of worship, religious traditions that stretch across the generations, the power of the nations like the United States, none of these are permanent. All have their day, and then they go. Difficult, terrible times do happen in human history. Desolation, destruction, all these may come. And yet, God is still God. Some of what may look to us like the end can, in God's purposes, be the birth pangs of new and unimagined possibilities. God knows in 2021, we don't know what the next 10 years is going to be. We don't know what the next year is going to be. Surely COVID has also taught us that. But we know that God is with us. God is in us. I share these words from Steve Garness Holmes, reflecting on this text. When dread for the world comes over me, when Jesus' end times nightmares sound more familiar than strange, I recall he says these things facing his own crucifixion. They were recorded by his followers reeling at the destruction of the temple. He's not foretelling the future, he's saying what he sees. It's what I see. Things will get worse. Worlds may end, but this is not the final act. This agony is our birth canal, as we are torn from what we have known, not to an end, but to a new beginning. The world becomes something more, bereft of all but our umbilical love and courage. We trust not in some surprise that comes later. We trust in a mystery that is greater than we can see, a deep life that enfolds us and unfolds with us. Love is the womb, love is the breast, and love is the everlasting arms. Our becoming will come with loss, but it is not the unbecoming of who we are. After all, we are creatures of light.